We sit glued to the TV set all night
and every night.
Why go into the outside world at all?
It's such a fright.
We got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of...
Hi, and welcome to TV Times 3, episode 120. I'm Jason the TV-aholic, and this week I have joining me...
Mel from nicegirlstv.com, checktv.net, and true-blood.net.
And Liz from all of those places. I just follow Mel around the internet.
Yeah. Well, if I remember correctly, it was all her fault.
It was.
Hey! Hey! Yeah, it was.
Call back to previous Liz episode. This will be the first episode that we've done that doesn't have at least two of us from the original three on the podcast. So Liz and Mel are the first two guests to have on it at the same time on the show.
Does it count that I have a standee of Amory sitting right next to me?
Yeah, and I have a photo of Ray. So
well, if you break out in song at any time, then we'll know that it's working.
Good to know. Yeah. There's all these inside jokes that I'm, you know, from Amory and Ray that I'm thinking now. Can't use that one. Nope, can't use that one. Anyway, hey, let's talk TV.
Yeah, so a little bit of news, very little bit. One piece of news is from the past week, but a really good piece of news. ABC has finally scheduled the third season premiere of Cougar Town for Tuesday, February 14th, to follow Last Man Standing.
Which is kind of an awkward lead-in.
I think it's a weird pairing, but at least it'll be back on TV.
Exactly. Yeah. Finally. I don't know. Oh, gosh. What were they thinking over at ABC? Seriously.
I don't know.
All of these, you know, man comedies, you know, Work It and, you know, I don't even remember what they were before. The other ones that have already been canceled.
Yeah, the other one that Amory sort of liked, I can't even remember the name of it right this second, but, I mean, Work It was terrible. That's one of those shows that it boggles the mind that it made it to
I know. Somebody must have had
like, okay, it made it to pilot, but once they saw the pilot, they were like, yeah, let's put that on the air.
Yeah, I don't get it. That was truly, truly awful.
Originally, their mid-season schedule, it was supposed to be... You know, Don't Trust the Bitch in Apartment 23 and Cougar Town to come back as a pair.
Which would be a good pairing.
You know, and in the 9 o'clock hour. I still think that some of the shows that show up in the 8 o'clock hour still seem weird. I guess it's sort of old school of what the first hour of prime time is and stuff like that. But now you have things like Whitney and Cougar Town and whatnot showing up in that time spot. But it'll be interesting to see what it does with audience-wise from 10 million or so that are watching Last Man Standing to Cougar Town.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was with girlfriends this weekend for our girls' weekend. And we were talking about TV, and one of them said that she's like, have you guys watched Whitney? Oh, my gosh, it's so funny. And I couldn't help it. I just said, what? Why are you watching this? It's like the worst show on television. It is so awful. And then I realized maybe that's not what you say to your friend.
Just completely chastise them for their comedy.
I know. It's so awful. I cannot stand that show. So anyway, sorry, friend.
Yeah, there's the occasional funny moment, but most of the time it has weird reactions, like the way they react to things that they do. It just completely takes you out of any semblance of it being sort of real that you're watching. And most of it, the setup between the two is just like that it's just this huge fight between the two, like every episode. It's like a new fight.
Yeah, it's like you guys don't even like each other, so why should we care?
And then it gets solved to never be brought up again, you know, is pretty much.
Pretty boring.
Good writing. Yeah.
They gave it a really good pairing there with the Chelsea show.
I have not even tried watching that.
I am so not interested in. Yeah,
yeah. I watched the original pilot, and I was like,
don't think
they changed some actors, but if it's still the same people writing, it's not gonna, it's not any good. And I don't particularly care for Chelsea Handler all that much, and she's even worse than normal playing her sister on the show, you know, kind of thing. It's very strange.
Yeah, I can't stand, for one thing, she's wooden on the show. She's just like a, you know, you want to get behind her and push something out of her. And then, you know, when she delivers her lines that are supposed to be funny, it's like she's like, oh, I know this line is funny, so I'm waiting for you guys to laugh now. So obviously, I don't know. I sit
like
there rolling my eyes a lot.
So,
yeah, and I'm just for one thing, I don't think she's that funny. I thought it was just my, you know, me again. That's not my thing, but apparently a lot of people agree with me. I'm not going to give it.
When you start dropping audience down in your ear, down or under 4, 5 million or whatever, following The Office as a comedy, you're, you know, on NBC, that's not a good sign. And then they moved it to Wednesday, and I don't think it's done any better by itself, even with, you know, some less competition to begin with. But the good news, anyways, is that Cougar Town will be back, whether it's paired with something strange or not. To me, I don't really care that much about pairings, but they still seem to actually have some to this day, you know, even with people.
It is nice to have flow.
Yeah, even with people recording things and stuff like that.
Yeah, now that I have the DVR, I often create my own flow. You know, so like on Thursday nights on NBC, I record 30 Rock, Parks and Rec, and Up All Night. And then if I watch 30 Rock by itself, and then I'll watch Parks and Rec and Up All Night together, because I kind of have the same sort of tone. There's a sort of a, you know, kind of a softness and a sweetness, whereas 30 Rock is really has a harder edge and is a more satirical. So I don't like watching the two of them. You know, I don't like watching 30 Rock with the other two.
The DVR is an interesting little monster where, especially if you've like not been able to watch some stuff throughout the week and you've got the DVR piled up with stuff, it's always interesting how you start watching things. You know, like what's there? You're like, what am I in the mood for? Comedy. And then like, what comedy will you choose first on what's, you know, what's been recorded and what, you know, what will you watch next? And it's always interesting that it is. You sort of end up with your own personalized block.
Your own lineup. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of watching stuff.
Yeah.
A little prime time this week. I'm not going to sing it. I'm only going to say it. So the first show we have on the list this week, we have a little bit shorter list. I've had a gazillion inches of snow here in Seattle, and which has caused all kinds of trees falling and power lines down and cable outages. And so I haven't been able to even watch like half the stuff that was on last week that I would normally watch. But of what we were able to put together, we'll start out with Castle, Season 4, Episode 12, Dial M for Mayor. So what did you both think?
You know, I liked that they came around again to, they're not forgetting about the conspiracy theory thing going on with Castle and I don't remember his name, but the mystery surrounding Beckett's mom's murder and everything. And I'm glad they're not forgetting that storyline. They keep coming back to it, but I'm getting a little bit frustrated and I wish they would just resolve it.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Red John thing on The Mentalist. You're like, well, okay, that's right. That is an interesting plot. So how come we aren't actually focusing on that and getting more done? I forget all about her mother's murder until they remind me of it in this way. It doesn't feel like it's a, you know, a real through line of the episodes.
Yeah, they've sort of expanded it out. They keep expanding it out. Like the conspiracy is bigger and bigger. Like this group that's behind these things is, they're behind all kinds of things. Like, you know, they were pretty much behind setting up the mayor so that he couldn't end up running for governor.
Oh, man. That was really something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The one thing I really wish is that we would have, that they would have showed, since it sort of came back up, if they would have showed, like, Castle's, since, you know, in the first episode back, they showed that Castle was like, well, I'll keep her from investigating it, but that doesn't mean I can't investigate it. And he had his whole big board of stuff, you know. And it would have been interesting if they would have shown that again, if any more progress that he's made or what else, you know, he might have found out or something like that. But yeah, they sort of just touch on it just a little bit here and there. It tends to be around this time so far throughout the series is it comes up about halfway through as sort of the towards the end of, you know, the first set of episodes somewhere, or it's always been around, you know, episode 12 or 13 that they sort of dive back into this a little bit. But yeah, sometimes I think that when they do these shows that have, you know, this through point, that they don't have to keep it forever.
Yeah.
Somehow they think that as long as the series is on, that you have to continue with this one storyline, that, like, you couldn't ever resolve this. And the one risk I think that they have is they keep expanding it, and every time it sort of gets bigger, as I wonder how much of this they originally had in mind.
Right. So how are they going to keep it all together?
And how much of this do they go, well, we need to extend it out some more, and so they add on to it. And so far, they've done really well with it. But I worry that maybe it gets too big, and then it makes it hard to resolve in a way that you go, wait, that's it?
You know, for my part, I don't even care anymore.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I
really don't care. They can blow it up until it's too big. I really like the show just the way it is. You know, just tell me a story every week and, you know, relationships between Castle and Beckett and the team. I think they're funny. And I like the stories, and I like how they get them resolved. I'm all about that. I'm all over that. But bringing all this other stuff behind the scenes, and then you know it's gonna be a bigger story and a bigger story, like you're saying. For me, I don't care. You're gonna lose me. I'm just gonna lose interest. Mm-hmm. You know, just skip those episodes altogether because I just don't care.
Yeah, I think it needs to be resolved. You know, it's something that should be resolved. You know, even if it's in such a way that, like, you don't necessarily take the conspiracy down, but you at least know what it was.
Yeah.
But you just can't prove it in such a way to bring the people down that were behind it, you know, necessarily or something. I don't know.
You know, the thing is that people didn't start watching Castle because of that story.
Right, exactly. That's what I was going to say. I'm with Liz, and I don't really care. I mean, I care because it informs Kate's character, and it's interesting how they brought Castle in as a part of it, in that he's her protector without her knowing it. And I assume they're setting that up to be a source of conflict to keep them apart.
Yeah, that it's going to blow up at that point.
Yeah, I just feel like they already have the will they want they with Kate and Beckett, with Kate and Rick. And then they also have, you know, now they've got the tension with Iron Gates. And then they have the case of the week. And they have Esposito and his woman issues. And they have, you know, Ryan getting married, and they have, you know, and they have Esposito as, you know, in his past in the military, which has come up a few times. They have all of these things, and it's just like, you know, pick something.
I feel like that's enough.
Yeah.
I feel like that's enough. Anything else is going to just be overkill. I do like the scene between Highgate and Kate this past episode. I thought that was really good. We got to see a little bit more, you know, enriching of Highgate's character. You know, she's not just a, you know, hard nails chief. There's just more to her. And I really liked seeing that. Whether I want to see any more, I don't know. I don't care. There's enough going on.
Yeah. It's like, get back to the fun of solving whatever the case with the Castle's wacky theory of the week, you know, type of stuff.
Right.
That partially pans out, you know, type of thing. And I think that you probably need to, you're going to need to solve this thing to continue on any progression of Beckett's character. Like, she's sort of stuck. They've kind of set it up that way, that she's sort of stuck until she finally does know, you know, enough about this that they can't really develop her character much more without solving it. And so you kind of need to do it that way, because you can't just, you know, leave her in limbo forever. Because they've done a really good job to this point. But past this, if the obstacles of keeping them apart start seeming Bones-like, where just for the heck of keeping them apart.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It really will become quite unnerving.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Finish off her story. Put them together or not. I don't care. I just give me the case of the week.
That's right. Listen to Liz, people. Okay, so that's enough of Castle.
Yeah.
Move on to another show that you know, that sort of fun action. White Collar returned.
Yay!
Season 3, episode 11, Checkmate, the mid-season premiere or winter premiere. Just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
They like to do these episode enders, you know, cliffhanger type stuff in the, you know, for mid-season, at the end of seasons, you know, they, and sometimes just in other episodes. So you end up with 2 to 3 of these cliffhangers a season. And this is the first one that had any real
resonance.
Yeah, meaning to it. Like, it wasn't, they didn't just come back and, oh, they found her already type of thing. Like, there was, it took the whole episode to solve it. Plus, it brought up a whole bunch of things for all the characters setting up their story moving forward. And it gave the cliffhanger of, you know, last season some actual meaning. And it was definitely the best of those that they've done.
Yeah, it felt like it was, the stakes were a lot higher because this wasn't some, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but Neil's true love that got blown up on the plane. I'm sorry. We met her for 30 seconds. I don't care. I'm not I'm not invested in her, and I'm sorry that it hurt Neil, but I couldn't really feel much of anything when it came to that. And then, you know, just some of the other stuff that's supposed to be some big dramatic cliffhanger, I'm like, all right, whatever. But in this case, it's Elizabeth, you know, it's Mrs. Suit. Mm-hmm. Everybody's affected by this. And they really built up her relationship with all of the different characters. And so it, you know, you can see that it's not just Peter that's going to be impacted by this, that, you know, Mozzie, Neil, you can totally believe that, yeah, they will help. They will turn themselves in, and they'll find the, you know, they'll do what they have to do as far as admitting that they stole the treasure in order to rescue her. It's believable. And that, I feel like that's been missing from a lot of the other plots that they've tried to make us get all tense about.
Yeah, a lot of the ones in the past, it's like 5 minutes into the episode, and they've already moved like 6 months past it or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you get like a casual reference to it, and then maybe it comes back to it a little bit to, you finally figure out how it was cleaned up, and you're just like, really? That was so worthless. What a waste of, you know, like Peter sitting there with the ring on in like the first season and stuff like that. All those types of things have been just completely for the purpose of trying to create some sort of, you got to come back and see this when we bring back the next, you know, the last 5 episodes or whatever.
Yeah.
This one, like you said, really hit home because of who it was and that it wasn't just cleaned up quickly. The whole episode was cleaning this up.
Yeah.
And then what happens where it sets Neil.
Yeah, exactly.
The way they catch the guy and then he takes, you know, credit for returning the treasure, you know, even though he ends up, you know, in jail over there or whatever. And so they're sort of off the hook over here. But it also puts Neil in this spot where he might be completely off the hook in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an interesting story arc to move forward, you know, for the rest of the season.
Right, because then what does that mean for his relationship with Peter and the ties that he just acknowledged that he has in New York? You know, he just chose New York over buying a private island, you know? He just acknowledged that he's ready to settle down. And he does have ties in New York, and I think the ankle bracelet, I think, was kind of a little bit of a crutch for him to be able to say, but see, I kind of have to stay.
Yeah.
And now if he's released, then where do his loyalties lie? He has to examine that again.
Right. And it's going to be interesting to see Mozzie, what decisions he makes. He already made a decision to stay around too. So what is this going to mean for the two of them? What are they going to do now? You know, they could pretty much do anything. What's Mozzie going to do? Is he going to, you know, steal something even bigger? I don't know. You know, has he finally given up the thieving life? Is he going to be a consultant? It's going to be interesting to see how the rest of this plays out. And, I'm interested, you know, I'm glad they kind of are moving on from this.
Mm-hmm.
They're just evolving the stories. So, and I like that.
And it ought to give them a little more freedom to do some traveling episodes, you know? They don't have to go through the whole hassle of, well, we got to get permission to get the ankle bracelet taken off and blah, blah, blah. So they're no longer confined to those, whatever, 2 square miles.
Yeah.
As far as where they can set the show. I wonder if that's part of it, too, if this gives them the opportunity to do some location shots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And woohoo, Elizabeth.
Yeah. No, no damsel in distress there.
No way.
Yeah, she was getting the job done.
Yeah.
I was impressed with her.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the turning up the heat and tricking the guy to leave and figuring out how to get through the unbreakable window and just like formulated a whole plan there of how she could get out.
Being married to an FBI agent pays off.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
And again, they've already established kind of a, I mean, we've seen her helping Peter and Neil and Mozzie with plans for and figuring out cases and stuff. So they've already established the fact that she's a smart woman and she can think along those same lines.
Yeah.
Well done, White Collar.
Excellent return.
Yeah, and the next episode is pretty much just as good.
Yeah, yeah. We've seen the next two, actually, and they're it's I think the best season so far, in my opinion. This half of the season, anyway.
Well, with what they set up in this episode, I think it makes the rest of this season very interesting and sort of puts it probably on a what's Neil going to do with, like, actual freedom, you know, mm-hmm. going into the next season. But I hope that they do keep it continuing to grow. Like, you don't need to have the ankle bracelet on him to keep him there to work on the cases, you know, type of things. Like, that the show grows beyond that, but still mm-hmm. gives you the fun, you know, cases and using his and Mozzie's knowledge to run cons on,
yeah.
you know, various bad guys.
I think they've really laid the groundwork for that to be the case for both of Neil and Mozzie to decide that, yeah, they're going to stick around and they're going to work with Peter and the FBI. So
that'd be fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'll stick around for that.
Yeah.
That's White Collar. So the next show on the list is Happy Endings. Season 2, Episode 12, Making Changes. With one couple reverting back to their college days and one completely addicted to watching shows like Hoarders and stuff like that and realizing that Dave has a compulsion of his own with the V-neck t-shirts.
Yes. But at the root of it, there was an important lesson for Penny that she does not have to change according to the man that she's with. You know, there is a lesson to be learned.
And that, but she ends up changing the guy into the perfect guy for the girl that he was with before.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you can't win them all.
Yeah. The only thing with this show is weird is they can't seem to make up their mind of what they want to do with Dave, Penny, and, you know, some of the, you know, at the end of the first season, they sort of brought it all the way back around that there might be still something between Dave and Alex, but then they open up season two, and that's completely gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple episodes ago, they sort of hinted at maybe there could be something between Dave and Penny, and then in the very next episode, they have Dave and Penny's parents together, and them acting as brother and sister, and you're just like, make up your mind on what you want to do with these characters. But yet, even with that, each episode is just freaking hilarious.
Yeah, they really are. The things that it does remind me a lot of Friends, because I've been watching some of the Friends reruns recently, and especially in the early days, there's some really laugh out loud funny stuff, and some of it is ridiculous. But it's stuff that you actually do with your friends, you know? You do, you sit and watch those Hoarders marathons, and then, you know, after you've seen, like, 14 episodes in a row, or over the course of a weekend, suddenly you look around you, and you're like, oh my gosh, this person has a problem, let's do an intervention. You know, I totally get it. But what I really loved was seeing Jane in her college days, no, you know, Gwen Stefani get up.
Yeah, when she realized that she had changed too since then.
Mm-hmm. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was good. I really like Alicia Cuthbert, and you know, I like I like what they've done with the Alex character. She's sort of, she's kind of the Joey character.
She totally is.
She's not the brightest. I about fell off, you know, fell off the couch laughing when they were like, a baker's dozen, 11, 13. Wait, I think my baker's been ripping me off.
Yes, exactly. I know. That's a very Joey thing to have, you know, to say.
Yeah, it was so. just, and you know,
reminds
just,
me of the tailor. Remember the tailor? What do you mean it's to have a measure pants?
Yeah. she has all these great, you know, there's these great lines in the show. They just move past, you know, they just keep going.
Yeah.
You either pick it up when it happens or you don't. And yeah, the show is very Friends-like. I've, you know, ever since the beginning, the sort of character types have been sort of mixed around, you know, where not one specific character is exactly. Alex has sort of like Joey traits.
Jane's a little bit Monica.
Yeah, Jane has some Monica traits to her with some things, and and you know, Penny is sort of Rachel. You know, can't ever seem to find the right guy or whatever.
Right.
I look forward to the show. Like, it's become one of my top comedies because you're almost guaranteed a couple of laugh-out-loud funny moments an episode.
Yeah, for sure.
Along with everything else that just sort of makes you chuckle or smile. And not a lot of comedies do that. You know, even some of the good ones, you, like... At the end of it, you're like, oh, I enjoyed that episode, you know, and you kind of smile your way through it, and, you know, you're like, oh, that was funny, but you didn't really laugh, you know? But there's these little situations in here that the way they set things up, when the punchline gets delivered, it makes you laugh.
Yeah, they've got some good writers and some really just fearless actors on that show. And, you know, there's a fair amount of that that's improv. So that makes it even more interesting. I mean, the bloopers that get put on the DVD. Oh my gosh, the stuff they don't use is it's kind of R-rated, to be honest with you. But there's some funny, funny people, and they are not afraid to take risks. I'm liking how they're expanding the cast.
They are pretty much geared to do pretty much anything. I mean, and so are any guest actors that they've brought on, like. Are pretty much on board for anything as well.
That's just what I was going to say. I really like how they're expanding the cast to bring in like the parents and stuff. And then to have Penny's mom and Dave's dad together. Oh yeah. Yeah. Let's keep that going. It's not only hugely beneficial for the comedy side of the show, but it also gave Dave and Penny a chance to bond in a way that they hadn't really before. You know, and to talk about siblings and stuff. So, which makes the other kind of connection that they had previously weird. But
I just wish that they, you know, the writing staff, they're hilarious. But for any sort of character growth story arc, I wish they would sort of figure out what they want to do.
Be a little more consistent.
So they can sort of, so at least the little things along the way sort of continually to move you in a certain direction and not sort of whiplash you all over the place.
Yeah. So, yep. Another good one from Happy Endings and aptly titled. It is usually a happy ending to my block of comedy on Wednesday night before the drama of revenge.
Which is next on our list.
Yikes.
Segway much? Revenge Season 1, Episode 13, Commitment.
Yeah, OMG. GGG.
Yeah. Is there nothing that Emily will not do? I mean, wow. I did not see having Victoria's lawyer on her side. I didn't see that coming.
No, I didn't see that either.
They had the little flashback earlier that they had met before, and she had the look, you know, she looked at him as he was leaving, you know, one time at the Grayson estate, but there was no recognition from his side of anything, and so there wasn't anything that was on board until when the DNA, you know, test came back. You were like, okay, how'd they do that? Because you know that the other one is not you're right. Like, okay, is he, where, how did he change the, or, you know, what happened there? And then you see the meeting afterwards and you're like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. When I saw that she recognized, you know, the little flashback and her recognizing him, I thought, oh, great. He's next on our list. So.
Yeah. That's the way they played it. They played it really well that way, as like he was going to end up being somewhere on the list. But it turns out that he's sort of on her side. He knows, he believes that, you know, his, her father was innocent. So that was an interesting, you know, little change of pace. And also having, like, something go a little bit too far, where somebody that she cares for gets hurt because of something she's put in motion.
Not just Jack either. I think he's feeling a little bit, whether she wants to or not, there's a little connection there with Charlotte now that she found out that Charlotte is her half-sister.
Yeah, especially once she showed up looking for her brother at the house. But also just seeing that she was ready to, like, back off a little bit and slow things down and rethink things until she heard the latest lie from Victoria about...
And then it was game on, Victoria.
Oh, man.
And then she was like... Yeah, she was like, yeah, I can't... Yeah, I can't marry you quick enough.
Right.
And then she's going to have access to controlling interest in Grayson Corp or whatever it's called. And I have to wonder. I mean, I don't. They haven't really addressed that yet on the show or in any conversations that anybody's had. It's all been about Daniel, you know, helping Victoria get controlling interest in the company. But we've seen how far-reaching and well out and long played Emily's plans are. So now she's possibly going to have access to controlling the company?
Yeah, I think that's sort of been, you know, possibly part of her long-term goal of getting with him anyways, is being able to, you know, even if it's by, you know, you're married and he now has controlling interest and all this stuff comes for him, then, you know, now that you're a married couple, you're sort of part of that. And if you ever got divorced yourself, you would then have access to probably getting part of that type of stuff. But ultimately keeping it away from Victoria, because now that you see that the lawyer, you know that she knows a lot more about anything else that Victoria told him about, you know, anything, and what she was, she obviously knew way more about what was going on in the divorce proceedings than, you know, you thought that she knew.
Yeah, that was a big reveal, you know, just not just knowing that, you know, there was a connection between, you know, Emily and the lawyer, but how much Emily had information to that. I mean, who knew up until that point? I don't know. I just assumed that Nolan pretty much was her only source of knowledge of what goes on over there. But here you get a chance to see that she has, you know, other resources already in place. And I don't, it was awesome.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. This has been a long plan on her part. She has a network of people that are feeding her information, whether or not they know it. You know, because, what's the social secretary? What's her name? Alex? No. That was dating
a friend.
Mr. Ripley.
Ashley?
Ashley. She's been giving her information without realizing it. She's been providing Emily with information. Amanda's giving her information. You know, she's Daniel's giving her information. So she's getting, she's getting stuff from all kinds of people. And again, we don't even know who else she has in place already. So,
Well, once again, I think it showed that one of the things that we talked about last week on the podcast was Joe from Pop Culture Zoo was on, and he hadn't seen the show. And so we were sort of explaining the show to him, and his reservation was when he saw it, that it was like, how long can you go? Which was a lot of our initial reservation with the show. And I think with revelations like this in this episode and stuff that they keep doing, that they show that the show has a lot of legs. Like, they can go, you know, for a decent period of time with continuing to unravel all the stuff and all the people that were involved with things not always going exactly to plan, you know? And so I think they continue to show that they seem to have a plan, you know, of where to take things. Because when you watch that first episode, you're like, okay, a takedown a week. Really? You know? How long can this series go?
Oh, I was all for it. I was all for it. It could go on forever. I'm concerned. A takedown a week? Yeah, bring it on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want to see it.
But for the overall conspiracy, though, you were just like, how many people could there be involved? But they've shown that there's a lot in place to be able to take down this powerful, rich family. And then they keep bringing on, you know, others like the book author. And like you said, they brought on this lawyer where you thought that the lawyer was going to be a target at some point. And then turned out not to be. And so they just have the way that they keep unfolding stuff. There's a lot there to work with.
Yeah.
Which I'm very happy to see. And the cast is just fantastic. They just...
Oh, absolutely. It was a pretty emotional episode, especially towards the end when Daniel was, you know, revealing. I think it started pretty much when Victoria allowed Daniel to believe that she had been raped by David.
Yeah,
that's his name, right? David? Yeah,
yeah,
David.
She is just
a horrible
person, man.
And I'm sitting there with my mouth. Oh, my God. My mouth was on the floor. I'm like, you are not going to go there, are you? But she did. And then as Daniel was, telling Emily about it, and all this venom started pouring out of him towards this man, which is her father, I'm looking at the look on her face, and I'm like, dear God, how much more can this woman take? She's already had to live with, you know, being broken as a child. I mean, they showed that in this episode, how they broke her in this episode, right? Yeah. And they showed how exactly they went about breaking her. And then for her to go through all those years believing that her father was the monster that everybody said, only to find out, in fact, that no, he wasn't. He was the fall guy. But the entire nation believes that he is a monster. And then Victoria goes and throws this into the mix as well. I'm like, oh, my God. Man, go after her. Take her down.
Yeah, because every once in a while, they sort of almost make it seem like Victoria sort of got caught up all in this, and she ended up going along with to be able to keep the wealth and all that stuff. She went along with the lie, but at times they almost look like they're going to make her a little bit sympathetic in all of this, and then she pulls something like this and you're just like, no, she's just whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever she was or may have been with David, getting caught up in all this stuff since then has just turned her into a completely horrible person,
as if it wasn't enough that she threw him under the bus with her husband the first time, and she does it again and he's dead. Like, oh my gosh, seriously?
Yeah,
you're not done with him yet? Sheesh.
How much could she have loved him?
You got to thinking, like you were saying, you got to thinking that she really did. And I mean, I certainly fell for it. Like Conrad must have had something big on her or something. Just his hold must have been strong enough to where she didn't, she was willing to go along with his plan to, cover up their mess and, use David as the fall guy. And yeah, greed. She was greedy, I'm sure. She didn't want to lose all that she had. But she had no love for Conrad. And they made you believe that she really loved David. And you think, she's going to come around and maybe she could be, in fact, an ally when she finds out that Emily is really Amanda. And then this happens. And you're like, yeah, this woman has no soul.
I really don't think it's that she has no soul, because I think they've alluded several times now to before she married Conrad and her life before then. And, I get the impression that she's very poor and she had no, maybe she was the county. I'm not sure. But it was kind of, it seems to me that it was a situation where she more or less she trapped him into marrying her by claiming she was pregnant and then quote unquote having a miscarriage. And so it, somehow there's some sort of self-preservation thing going on. And I think she's in it so far at this point that she cannot see a way out by doing the right thing. She can't do the right thing and confess everything without absolutely destroying everything that she has including, you know, with her children. And I think that's what's going on, is she's trapped and she's been lying and scheming for so long. And the look on her face when she was looking down in that flashback, when she found out she was pregnant, the look on her face as she's looking down at the whoever it was raiding the house, the house, she was clearly upset and having second thoughts. But, you know, there was no way. There's nothing she could do at that point. And she had just found out she was pregnant. So mm-hmm. what's she going to do? I don't want to defend her too much, because I do think that she's done a whole lot of things that were wrong.
Yeah, but I think you're hitting on something, is that there's these times where you think, oh, maybe she's somewhat redeemable. But then now that you mention it, you're going back to the little bits that they've told you about her backstory, is that she probably did scheme her way into ending up, you know, sort of the way that Emily is doing with her son, mm-hmm. into getting this, you know, rich guy to fall in love with her. Mm-hmm. But even in that scene there, she's upset, she's not sure what to do, but she's pregnant, and she instantly goes and basically is like, stay with me tonight. I need to have slept with you so that I can, you know, because right there in that moment, on the same night that the guy that she's supposed to be in love with just got arrested for this whole thing.
Yeah. Right. She's pregnant with his child. He's going to jail for being responsible for the deaths of terrorist attack on American soil.
For being.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's have his baby. No. How in the world is that going to be good for her or the baby? She made the choice she had to make.
But it shows that she instantly can just, that she goes to that self-preservation, that trying to keep whatever it is that she's got.
Yeah, well, that, and she's, you know, this may be a male-female thing, Jason. She's pregnant. It's instinctual. You do what you have to do to protect the baby. And she already had Daniel. She couldn't admit that she was now pregnant with this person, you know, this man's child, no matter how much she loved him, because they set him up to take the fall. So I just don't think there was a way out for her. She had to make a split second decision. And it was, I'll stay with the man who's in control of the situation versus the man who's going to jail.
And she's already too far deep into the setup of him.
Mm-hmm. There's no way out. I think she was fooling herself if she ever thought that she could get him out of it.
Yeah,
get him
she
acquitted.
Would, you know, completely lose everything. And, you know, her kids would lose everything. And but yeah, they keep adding a little bit more, like, yeah, take these people down. Like, let's not take our foot off the gas pedal. let's get going. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be because, you know, here then Emily also just Nolan, you know, we're just going to press pause for a minute there. Wow. Nolan's head's going to spin. I wonder if he's going to stay by her side.
Well, I don't know if,
you know,
once he hears the story, though, I think he might be back on board, you know, pretty much.
That's true. That's true. Because he was all for defending her father. Mm-hmm. So, well, we'll see how far he's willing to go then.
He's a,
I don't know,
little bit
pretty
of a wild
emotional.
Card. Yeah.
Well,
I'm still not,
you know,
entirely
got,
sure
he,
about Nolan.
You know, I like him because he is Emily's conscience. He'll make her, you know, but maybe too much, I guess. Mm-hmm. Maybe too much. She really, if she's in this for revenge, she really can't have a conscience about it. Mm-mm. She basically made a decision when she started down this path. Like her mentor told her, the Japanese guy, her trainer, her mentor.
Say, yeah.
Yes. You know,
he pretty much
starts down it.
If she was going to continue on the path.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but only if she was going to show some heart for, you know, singling out one person over another, like with Daniel. I don't think he was on board with that. It's either, in other words, I think he basically taught her, you're either in all the way or nothing. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you all know matters of the heart are going to trip her up.
Mm-hmm.
That's already been proven.
And just when she thinks maybe she should be listening to Nolan, a.k.a. her conscience, and take a step back and see, you know, the collateral damage, it's too much. that's when she gets this harsh reminder that no, it's not too much. There's collateral damage is collateral damage, period.
Right.
Yeah, because these people that I'm going after have no problems of hurting anybody, to keep their secret.
Right. They don't care. I mean, look what they did to, one man and his life and a little girl. They didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, as far as Victoria is, with her, defending her kids and all this stuff. Great. Yay. She's a mom. That's wonderful. But here's this other child who was deprived of, a life with her father because of what she did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, but I don't care. Your kids came up, were, raised in privilege. And this little girl was stuck in the system, not just put in the system, but broken. And by the way, why? Why was it so important for Victoria to make sure she had no contact with her father?
I don't know. I don't get that. I'm hoping that that's an episode coming up later that's revealed.
I hope so.
I think part of it was because the young Emily had seen them together and was hoping to, sort of keep that out of being found out or, having...
Oh, yeah.
Making her seem, the kids seem crazy or two or whatever. So that I think at least that's originally why I think she put her in, the little kids home with the one psychiatrist that just
that she bought off.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. she ended up, taking down there with the, mm-hmm. A few episodes in.
Yeah, but I mean, if it were just that, I'd buy it. But it wasn't just that she, had her stuck in a home and, put back in the system because she's an orphan, basically. But mm-hmm. she denied any contact between father and daughter. Why did she, what was the point of that? And then to break her like that, to constantly feed into her that her father was a monster. How could that? You know what I'm saying? It's like one doesn't have to do with the other. She wanted just to shut her up and mm-hmm. make her forget that Victoria was ever in the house. Why would she even? It's just too much. There's got to be something more.
Well, I think it could just be that they went over the top with trying to, they go sort of too far with everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe, but that would disappoint me.
Well, but Victoria couldn't have been the only one involved in keeping her from her father. So maybe there's another reason. Maybe there's a reason that Conrad didn't want her to be in contact with him. Maybe it was just that they were out for whatever reason, they were out to destroy David and they knew how much he loved his daughter. Therefore, it wasn't so much keeping her from him as keeping him from her.
Maybe. But I also got to wonder why they chose him and not, why did they single him out? Was there a special, did Conrad do that? If it was his idea, did he find out about the affair?
Mm-hmm.
I think he found out some of that type of stuff, but also that inside the company, David was in the position to be able to be set up for it, to be able to know about certain things that happened and to have made it look like he had his hand in funneling money to certain places that, it wasn't supposed to go or that it was supposed to go, but they didn't want to get caught as seeing that it was them that was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying maybe David knew? Maybe he found something? I suppose so.
Maybe he found something, but just that his position within the company or whatever he was just in the wrong place at the right time sort of thing.
Right.
To be able to be the person to be set up. And all the other things that were going around it, just extra motivation for Conrad to want to do it. And I don't know, just lots of stuff there with the revenge. But speaking of interesting lots of stuff, our next show is Chuck, Season 5, Episode 11, Chuck versus the Bullet Train.
Yeesh.
And mm-hmm. holy crap, did they put you in a spot... And you're like, wait, there's only two episodes left? How do we get to the happy ending?
Yeah. It does leave you wondering. They're going to be busy the next couple episodes. But I don't know. It was a fun episode as well as excruciating. Some excellent, excellent acting on Yvonne Strahovski's mm-hmm. part.
Oh, yeah.
That was phenomenal. heart-wrenching.
Yeah, there was some, boy, there was some great, great stuff in that episode. I really loved the how they used Jeff and Lester this yes. time around. and the thing with Lester and the, you know, where he picks up the earling and is talking to Casey, you know, and Casey eventually convinces him that, you know, his country needs him. He's like, Canada?
Yeah.
And then he comes around the corner all decked out and they're playing Oh Canada. I just about lost it. I was laughing so hard that you went that far with it. It was awesome.
Yeah. Well, that it worth was... the go to my Crown Vic. Just get a couple of pistols, you know.
Yeah.
And then as soon as he said that, you knew that they were going to go full on. And he came around with like practically everything that was in the trunk on himself. But my favorite part of the episode was, even though like Chuck was upset that she had, you know, the faulty version of the Intersect, but then after he finally, you know, sort of makes peace, that's where we're at, he just sort of pauses for a second and then is like, but how awesome is that? Like, and she's like, it's so great. Yeah. And they just start talking about
it. It's a great way for her to get that perspective of what it's like, been like for him.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was cool.
Yeah. It was fun. And it was sweet, of course, after that, the two of them together, drawing the picture from them in front of the house with the red door and the white picket fence and her holding a baby. So sweet. And you knew it was going to be significant, that picture.
Well, that's got to be part of what comes around to help bring her back.
Yeah.
They set it up with the, oh, I'll never forget that, when he showed it to her again.
Yeah.
After she said that she was forgetting Alex.
Probably going to be the trigger. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ellie was fantastic, showing again, reminding us once again what her field is, what her career is, and how helpful that could be. It's pretty impressive. I loved it. I love any scenes with Ellie because I think she's like one of the coolest on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, figuring out that it may be the number of times that starts the degrading, and then come to find out that it wasn't that it took a month. It took a month because they weren't doing anything for a while, and then he started flashing more when they went on some missions, and then you come to find out that in like 2 days that Yvonne's flashed like 40 times to figure everything out to be able to get to the bullet train, and that's why it's coming on so fast for her.
Yeah, and it was her and Devin together, so it was like team awesome figuring that stuff out.
I really liked that they had Devin involved in that because he's not really a brain surgeon. He's not a neuroscientist, so it was cool that they were finding a way to include him in that, and I think that is foreshadowing how their story arcs will conclude when the series ends on Friday. They're setting it up for them to be a team, doing something unknown. I'm betting they're the new Orion.
Yeah, that would make so much sense, and it would be great too. It'd be wonderful. I'd be really happy with them, their story ending that way.
I would too. I really would.
They just put you in that spot where you're like, really? That's where we are? You've now basically flashed her back to 5 years ago.
Oh yeah.
But there's only two episodes left.
that was kind of sad, you know, when she wakes up and she's in her old hotel room there, like from season one. And I'm thinking, oh, man, would that be horrible if they left it that way?
Yeah.
And a lot of people speculating that she would forget all about Chuck, but that would be extreme, to forget all about everything that happened and everything that they were planning for the future and just throw her back into that life that she didn't want anymore.
Yeah, the show's gone too far that they can't not leave you with a happy ending for everybody.
Plus, it's just the nature of the show. It's a happy show.
They
always go dark in the episode or two before the season finale. Always. Every single time. This is how it works. And then in the finale, they wrap everything up. You know, Ellie gives birth. Chuck and Sarah get engaged. They get married. They finally get together. They, you know, it's always a happy ending. And I you know, I've gotten kind of frustrated with the fans in the last couple of weeks over this, because I just feel like if you don't understand, if you aren't seeing the storytelling pattern after almost five seasons, I really don't know how I can help you get through this.
Yeah.
You know, right. Through the next few days, I just don't know what else to do. It's right there in front of you.
Because this is no time to break the pattern. this is no time to go a different direction when you know it's the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that's been the way, because they've never known when the end is going to be. So they've always partially wrapped it up, you know, mm-hmm. somewhat at the end of seasons. You know, even when they, you know, give Chuck an upgrade or something like that or whatever, that you can obviously go, oh, I want to see more of that, but still you can still leave it there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And this time they knew. They knew this was the end. They knew this was it. So there was no reason to do any sort of a little cliffhanger or anything like that. I mean, I think they'll leave it open. I think they'll leave it open just, you know, for us to kind of speculate about how the characters went on in the future and that sort of thing. But there's no reason for them to leave it to, you know, to do any sort of a cliffhanger like, oh, no, Morgan just uploaded the Intersect, or you know, Shaw's back, or you know, something. Like, I'm gonna hate mail for that. you know, there's no reason for them to do that because they knew this was the end. So
yeah. Looking forward to next Friday, or this Friday.
Oh yeah, I am, but
yes,
I'm not.
And no. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And
I'm
no.
gonna be sad. I'm gonna be crying.
It's gonna be difficult.
Know. Yeah, we usually record the Chuck podcast about an hour after the episode ends on Fridays. And I've already said, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to the next day because I know I'm not going to be able to do it.
Need a little time to process.
Exactly.
2 hours of the show.
Mm-hmm. That, and to get the swelling on my eyes down and, you know, not having to red. And,
yeah. Make sure you don't spend the whole podcast sniffling.
Yeah. Weeping puppy mail on the video cast.
Yeah, yeah.
Makeup running down our faces.
There's something in my eye. I don't know what's wrong. Yeah, it's going to be emotional. This is the first show that I have watched from the absolute, well, even before the beginning. I mean, ChuckTV.net went up in May of 07, the day after NBC announced that they picked up the show. Because Liz and I had already seen information on the pilot and who had been cast, and we're like, yeah, let's do that. That's going to be awesome. You know, so we've been involved, heavily involved in this show since before it even came on the air. And it's in our latest podcast, Gray, our co-host and our producer, outlines the five stages of grief. and we're going to be putting that up on the site also, just to kind of help people understand what it is that they're feeling. And why they're reacting this way, and why, you know, this week maybe things set them off that haven't in the past. You know, if you do suddenly burst into tears, you might be in this stage. If you're rationally angry about, you know, the barista for forgetting the cream in your coffee, you might be in the angry phase of grief, you know. So we're acknowledging that it's been important to a lot of people. It's been important to us for a long, long time.
If your husband gives you a peck on the cheek and says, "Good morning, honey," and you punch him in the face, you might be experiencing
Chuck loss.
Chuck loss.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. It's going to be, it's already, the Chuck TV site is getting a lot of traffic and a lot of people coming back and talking and saying, "Wait, what? This is the end?" And, "Oh my gosh." And, you know, there's a lot of reminiscing and catching up and things happening. So it is kind of cool to see some familiar names, I guess, not faces, but
mm-hmm.
popping up and people just sort of coming together to freak out, and then other people trying to calm them down, and then other people just saying, "You know, it's been a good ride."
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 5 years. Yeah.
It has been a good ride, and it's great when you could see a show that you love so much be able to have that closure.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And while it'd be sad, whoever thought that it was ever even going to come anywhere close to this many episodes?
I did. I always thought it was a 5-season show.
Well, it seems like that, but I mean, the way things have worked out for it, you know, with the ratings-wise and stuff like that,
yeah,
it never looked like, you know, and things like the writer's strike getting in the way in the beginning and all kinds mm-hmm. of things that, I mean, the writer's strike killed a couple other shows that...
A lot of other shows, yeah. they just couldn't regain their momentum. Yeah,
that were really good, and that just never, when they came back, they just didn't come. Those shows were gone, and this one made it through.
You know
that,
what? And yeah, I'll be honest though, Jason. The only time I ever seriously thought it may not come back was at the end of season 4. That was the first time that I seriously thought we were in danger of the show not being renewed. The other two, you know, season 1, season 2, season 3, I was not worried. I was very confident. Part of that was inside sources, but I was very, very confident that it was coming back. So I was sure. I might be the only one, but I thought it would get this far.
Well, it has. And yep. We'll be watching, and I'm sure, it'll be, Ray and Amory will both be back next week, and we'll be talking about it on the next episode. And I'm sure you guys will be talking about it plenty on the on the Chuck podcast.
Yep.
So
yeah, we'll be having, and then later on we'll be having in February and in March we'll have some kind of retrospectives going on. But all week on ChuckTV.net we've got interviews, we've got an awesome giveaway, and we've got a little support group going. So we're going through Chuck withdrawal. You know where to find us.
All right. Well, speaking of where to find us, you can find everything about this episode and where to find Liz and Mel online. No GPS tracking of their phones or anything, just website and Twitter addresses. But you can find out all. We'll have that all up at TV Times 3. Spell it all out. And that's the end of the episode.
All right.
Thanks for Mel and Liz coming on to join me on the podcast. It's been great.
Thanks for having us again, Jason.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. You two were the first two when I thought I needed two people to come on. I was like, oh, I'll have Mel and Liz come on at the same time.
Yeah. It's almost
we
like
are kind of a match set that way.
Yeah.
The opening and closing music was provided by IODA Promonut. The song is TV Party by the Asylum Street Spankers from their Mercurial title, put out by Yellow Dog Records. And that is officially the end of the episode. So thanks again for coming on. And we'll talk again soon. And I'm sure I'll be asking to have both of you on again in the future.
Cool.
We're happy to talk TV with you guys.
Because we are on Ray is doing once a month, and right now with Amory's doing twice a month, like every other week. So I'm in the who wants to be on the podcast to keep it going on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
All right. That should do it. It ended up being a much longer episode than anticipated with only 5 shows on the primetime list. This episode of TV Times 3 has been brought to you by Audible, where you can get a free audiobook download. Like Tina Fey's Bossy Pants, with a free 14-day trial of their service. Here, take a quick listen.
Why is this audiobook called Bossy Pants? One, because the name 2½ Men was already taken. And two, because ever since I became an executive producer of 30 Rock, people have asked me, is it hard for you being the boss, and is it uncomfortable for you to be the person in charge? You know, in that same way they say, gosh, Mr. Trump, is it awkward for you to be the boss of all these people?
You can get Bossy Pants or thousands of other audiobooks free. Just go to audibletrial.com/TVTimes3. Spell it all out. Again, that's audibletrial.com/TVTimes3 for your free audiobook.
We sit glued to the TV set all night.
And every night.
Why go into the outside world at all?
It's such a fright.
We got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.